Shopify grows your business no matter how far or big you grow. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Whether you're selling your fans' next favorite shirt or an exclusive piece of podcast merch, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/income, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/income now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in.
Hello and welcome to the Professional Book Nerds podcast presented by Overdrive. This is Joe. Hello, welcome back. Before we dive into today's episode, I wanted to remind y'all to rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you do your listening. If you'd like, we'd love to hear from you. You can leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It really helps boost the show to other listeners who might be interested as well. You can also connect with us on social media. We're on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. At Pro Book Nerds, and you can send emails to professionalbooknerds@overdrive.com. Whether you're sending over your Professional Book Nerds reading challenge once it's complete, suggesting ideas for future episodes, we would love to hear from you. With all of that out of the way, let's get into today's episode. Emma, hello.
Hi, it's been a while since we've been at the mic.
It has been a while for our listeners. I was helping to organize our conference, Digipalooza. I know I've mentioned it in passing in some prior episodes, but we did a little planning ahead, knowing that I was going to be super swamped last week with the conference live in here. And so if you are one of the wonderful partners who came to join us or any of our friends in the publishing industry, thank you for coming. Wanted to start that off. But now we're back at the mic and we're doing something a little different today.
We are. I'm so excited by this whole premise.
So, as all of you listeners know, Emma loves romance. Unabashedly loves romance. She's not shy about it. And I, you know, enjoy books with romantic elements, you know. So when there's a little bit of like, will they, won't they get together? But the main plot line is the like, can they escape the serial killer and then fall in love after? That's what I typically gravitate towards. So not romance. But the title of today's episode probably gave it away. Today is Joe Reads a Big Romance. So I just read Meet Me at the Lake by Carly Fortune. And we're going to talk about it.
Yeah. And so I'm going to provide some extra context just for funsies. Mm-hmm. Joe pitched this idea to me a few months ago, and I said, yes, please, any chance for you to read a romance. And so I sent him a list of, I think, like five or so popular or more recent romance books that I've read so we could discuss. And I pulled up that list. So I'm just going to let folks know what the full list was. It was Happy Place by Emily Henry, Book Lovers by Emily Henry, Forget Me Not by Julie Soto, Meet Me at the Lake by Carly Fortune, or Love in Other Words by Christina Lauren. And I'm really happy that Joe picked Meet Me at the Lake.
I mean, I couldn't. Let's just get it out of the way. Holy crap, I loved this.
Yeah.
I loved this book. You sent me that list and I was like, I don't know how I'm going to pick one of these because I knew they were, I've heard you talk about all of them. I knew they were all like big romances, as you know, back to the title. I knew they were all like big in the market. I knew that people who love this style of romance loved these books. I was like, how do I pick one of these? And it felt so natural to pick an Emily Henry because of your love for her. She's been on twice now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She's been on twice now. Like it felt right. And then I went to visit my friend in Columbus. And when I go to Columbus, I feel like we go to every TJ Maxx, Marshalls and Home Goods and every bookstore in the area. So every Half Price Books I walked into, I practically had a copy of Meet Me at the Lake fall on me every time. And that's when I was just like, this is it. This is the sign. This is the one I'm picking. Yeah. So Emma is going to be my guide to not let me go too stream of conscious of all of my thoughts. But it's a little kind of like reverse interview today.
It is. I am going to be like almost interviewing you about your experience reading a romance. And we're going to talk about this book. So I'll do a little description of the book and then we can dive into some questions. So this is, again, Meet Me at the Lake by Carly Fortune. This came out in May of this year. Fern Brookbanks has wasted far too much of her adult life thinking about Will Baxter. She spent just 24 hours in her early 20s with an aggravatingly attractive, idealistic artist, a chance encounter that spiraled into a day-long adventure in Toronto. The timing was wrong, but their connection was undeniable. They shared every secret, every dream, and made a pact to meet 1 year later. Fern showed up, Will didn't. At 32, Fern's life doesn't look at all how she once imagined it would. Instead of living in the city, Fern's back home, running her mother's Muskoka Lakeside Resort, something she vowed never to do. The place is in disarray, her ex-boyfriend is the manager, and Fern doesn't know where to begin. She needs a plan, a lifeline. To her surprise, it comes in the form of Will, who arrives 9 years too late with a suitcase in tow and an offer to help on his lips. Will may be the only person who understands what Fern's going through, but how could she possibly trust this expensive suit-wearing mirage who seems nothing like the young man she met all those years ago? Will is hiding something, and Fern's not sure she wants to know what it is. But 10 years ago, Will Baxter rescued Fern. Can she do the same for him? Dun, dun, dun.
I'm just smiling. I'm just smiling thinking about it.
Oh, it's so good.
It's so good.
What were your initial thoughts upon seeing this book? Like, what drew you to it? What did you find appealing?
So, number one, the cover, compared to like all of the other covers for all of the other books, like those to me, and 100% no shade, like this is a beautiful cover, but all of the other ones had a little more appeal to me. Like I love the Emily Henry style of the, you know, that kind of trend that was pretty big recently of like drawn characters in a very like comic-esque style format.
Yeah.
Like when I think of like beach read comes to mind and you see like the perfect lines of people on beach towels. Mm-hmm. I love that. And not even looking at it. And that's what comes to mind. This seemed so peaceful by the cover. And I think that's what got me, even though this is not a cover that typically pulls me in. I look at it and I was like, oh, this is going to take me on a ride, but like a gentle one.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I got from the cover. And that is absolutely what I got. Like it was perfect for me because I hit all of the emotional highs and lows at exactly my comfort level.
Yay. Yeah. And the cover is gorgeous. It's like watercolor-esque pink.
I love the purples and pinks.
And it's like there's a couple sitting on a dock. Mm-hmm. It is just a dreamy cover.
It's also really easy to like look at and look past, if that makes sense. Like you look at it and you might not even necessarily notice the couple on the dock. You're just kind of seeing the lake and you go, okay, yeah, I will meet you at the lake.
Oh, I'm so glad. And so was there anything from the synopsis that like jumped out at you? Like, were there any key phrases where you were like, ooh?
I am a sucker for the idea of a family business. I love the kind of like idealistic resort on the lake in the woods. And like, if it's not been clear from our summer camp reads and our final girl reads, like atmospherically, it had the setup for what I knew I would like. I also definitely, while reading both the synopsis and the book, had a solid understanding of, like, why people love a Hallmark movie. Because I could see, like, when you have a good Hallmark movie, this is what it has to plot out, like, that you have this natural flow. I really liked that at 32, Fern's life doesn't look at all how she imagined it. She's back home running her mother's Muskoka Lakeside Resort, something she vowed to never do. I loved that, first and foremost. I loved the energy of her ex-boyfriend being the manager.
Yes.
Because at first you go like, oh, is this about the two of them? Is this? And then you hear about Will. So I loved that they were setting up in the description a potential love triangle.
Mm-hmm.
Or like a draw of affection, but instead I really prefer how it plays out in the book, that maybe at the very beginning you're like, oh, is this about Jamie? Or is this going to be about Will? And you don't have to wonder for very long before you start into the tale. But yeah, those are the things that really popped out at me from the description, as well as wanting to know how Will Baxter rescued Fern, and if indeed she can do the same for him. Like, it's like, there was something in every paragraph that I went, oh, okay, tell me more.
So, yes. So overall, how did you find your first experience with reading like a big romance book? Like, what would you rate your experience out of five?
My experience out of five is a 5 out of 5.
Yay.
I knew you weren't going to steer me wrong, but I also knew there was going to be like, there were some options. Like, for me, I could have been like, oh, this is too cheesy, this is too silly, this is too whatever. Mm-hmm. And this book truly just ended up being like, it was exactly where I was at. It hit the pacing. I really liked Carly Fortune's writing. I would say the book is probably like a 4, 4.5. Mm-hmm. It's like, realistically, my experience overall also taints my love of the book. So it's, I would just flat out rate it 5 stars. But I think if I took a step back, I'd be like, yeah, it's probably like a 4.5 stars, because I dock some things here and there. But I think that's my critical, like, marketing brain over like the formulaicness of a romance. But I'm also I'm a formulaic reader. You know, I love a thriller. I love a mystery. So there's, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm a little more picky about the romance formula because it doesn't have to not be obvious. Like, in a thriller, a good thriller that's hitting that high should never be obvious. So, you know, me comparing my most similar kind of experiences, it was actually really refreshing that the author isn't trying to hide anything from me, you know, that it is just like, this is what should be happening. And I knew you were classifying this as a romance. So going in, I knew that it should be like happily ever after, because I believe that's what you subscribe to, to consider it a romance, right?
Yes. Yes. Okay. If it is a proper, I know that's like the romance, list. Yeah. It has a happily ever after. Yeah.
Okay. So I knew there was going to be a happily ever after for someone in here, or for Fern, for our main character, there should be a happily ever after. But I didn't know if there was any like toying with that at all, if you could consider it happily ever after, but you're happily ever after with yourself. It doesn't have to be another person, you know.
Yes.
I know. Okay. I was thinking too hard, Emma.
Well, and so that's a good point. I mean, you read a lot of thrillers. I also read a lot of thrillers, but then a bulk of what else I read is romance. And I think that's a good point, is that like, when you have these like staple genres that you always turn to, you turn to them for those specific formulas. And so with romance, as I attempt to get you to read more of them, I think we'll hone in on which of those tropes and formulas you enjoy in romance, because like you said, it's not necessarily keeping as big of secrets or twists from you as a reader, like in thrillers, but there are things that you're discovering about the characters in a romance that then create some of that tension and that like miscommunication, or that like, how do we overcome this obstacle to get to that happily ever after?
That is what I really liked about Meet Me at the Lake specifically, is that there is this whole backstory of what happened to Fern when she was in high school? What happened to her mom when she found out she was pregnant with Fern? What happened on that one day 10 years ago? So like having these things kind of being handed to me here and there as little treats and little breaks from the story was really enjoyable. It made it really meaningful because it broke up a lot of the tension. I also really liked this one because at no point did it ever feel really all that tense.
Yeah.
There was something very relatable to the fact that our two main characters are professional adults that have lived a life without each other for the past 10 years, and they know they can get through and go back to that if there is no happily ever after. So it to me felt grounded and healthy. I mean, yes. I think there's always going to be elements of romance that I'm like, that might be a little unhealthy, but I don't love a ton of tension. So when I knew we were hitting that like third act, it's time for the miscommunication, breakup, things don't work right. Mm-hmm. I started dreading it. I was like, oh no, is this going to be where I can't? Because like rom-coms, movies, when that happens in the movie, that's usually where I'm like, no, I don't want this part. Like I'm okay with it. But I think of like those moments where I'm just like, ugh, not what I want. And I think this is truly the second romance I've read. And the first would have been last year with Micah Summers, the 99 Boyfriends. And, you know, and I think for me in both cases, it was a similar kind of thing of like that one, the miscommunication was a little more tense. So this one was, oh, I just liked, well, anyway, no, I don't want to skip ahead.
No, but I think that's a good point and something that like we are identifying what you like and don't like about certain romance formulas. And I agree, like the third act breakup is sort of a trope or a structure that I know a lot of people don't like, but it is relatively common. And so figuring out which authors or which types of romance do that you can enjoy or ones that steer clear of that sort of classic third act breakup thing.
It's also very interesting as like a person who has read their fair share of like just straight up fiction literature, the difference, like the tiniest of differences between how Meet Me at the Lake reads and any of the other like, you know, top fiction titles, just like general lit titles, was really interesting as well, because like this is homey and atmospheric, and this could have truly just been a story about Fern's grief and grieving and healing. Like this could have been a Mamma Mia kind of, like this is a Mamma Mia read alike, honestly, because of the like, oh, discovering the love of the head pastry chef as her like pseudo father and reading her mom's diaries and discovering herself. You could take the romance elements out of this and you've still got like a really strong, just lit title. So it was interesting to see that as well.
I agree. And so to get some logistics out of the way, how did you read this? Ebook, audiobook? Did you enjoy the narrator?
So I listened to the audiobook. It was a fantastic experience. AJ Bridell is the narrator. Fantastic job. Like it was just really delightful. I believe Carly Fortune pops in a couple times in the audiobook. Her name was called out at the beginning and as far as speaking parts. And I believe she reads the afterword. So also nice to hear from the author.
Love that.
But overall, yeah, really well done. You know, I love an audiobook. So it was a great way to enjoy it.
Yeah. Oh, and so I really enjoy Carly Fortune. She had her sort of big debut last year with Every Summer After. And then this year, her book, Meet Me at the Lake, just blew me away even further.
Yeah. I also love the trend of cover mates.
Yeah. So like her books aesthetically look very nice together. And I know this is a silly thing that influenced my appreciation of this book. I loved this book. But then I also saw on Carly's Instagram, somebody had asked her what like the Taylor Swift theme song of this book would be.
Okay.
And I think she said, and I wish I could like find it. I think she said the Taylor Swift song for Meet Me at the Lake would be the one. And to me, that's even more perfect. So if you're a Swiftie,
if you're a Swiftie, now you know.
Now you know. So I know you enjoyed this book. You said that you really loved the sort of like family business resort, Dirty Dancing. I always got to call out Dirty Dancing vibes in this. What else did you like about the book?
I can list
a billion things.
So I loved this book. Kicking myself that I haven't picked up a copy of it yet. I will be picking up a copy to put on the shelves. This will be one of my recommended, like, hey, you need something to give a break from what you're doing right now. I loved, like I said, the family dynamic. I loved the setting, the atmosphere was so important to me because it was just so powerful. Swapping between Muskoka and Toronto and having like a solid vibe of the city and having a bit of that small town, but also the fact that it wasn't small town, this is resort town. And I think that's a big difference. I love the kind of like times in the kitchen. So setting was a big piece for me. I also really loved the structure of the book. I think that was super important. I know I mentioned that like the different breaks for how things were laid out gave me a chance to breathe from the main line of the story. And I also think it really amped up my overall attachment to the characters. So Meet Me at the Lake is broken up between, so the main plot line overall is the now, and that is with, I almost said Carly, that is with Fern. Are we doing spoilers?
Yeah, I feel like we're doing spoilers.
Okay, so Fern's mother dies in a tragic car accident, and Fern is basically forced to kind of leave her life in Toronto behind, where she is successful, but also not at the same time is kind of how I thought of it. And like, I found that really relatable, feeling like you're moving up while also actually kind of standing still because you're in your own way and maybe you're not doing what's making you happiest. So she's forced to come home and try to figure out what she's doing with her family's resort. They have this series of cabins on the lake. They have a restaurant, and the restaurant, you know, like is really popular within the town, but also these families come year after year, similar to Emma's kind of tale of her own experiences. And so Fern has to decide, is she going to keep it in the family and keep running it? Is she going to sell the land? Is she, you know, what's going on here? And in breaks of that, she's trying to force herself into the dining room one night to say hello to this like very long running family before they check out. And her ex-boyfriend, Jamie, who is the manager of the resort, is like, you gotta do it. She finally goes to say hello. She gets the hello like eked out because, of course, she's also still grieving. I really appreciated the grief. And then she has to check in her would-be great love, Will Baxter, who has somehow managed to work his way into the resort. He met with Fern's mother right before she died and set up a path where she can, where he can come and consult to try to bring the resort back to life. That's the other big thing, is that the resort is potentially failing because, you know, some of the stuff is just of the times and now it's time to update. And so she is forced to, so she had spent this like perfect day 10 years ago with Will. And so we jump and we get glimpses back on that one day 10 years ago. And then she's also reading her mother's diaries from when she found out she was pregnant. So we jump between these kind of three different times. And y'all already know I'm a sucker for a time jump, but I loved that. I really think it helped to steer, to endear, and to kind of, like I said, give me a breath.
I agree with everything that you said that you enjoy about all of that. Mm-hmm. It is also something that I enjoy in a romance. And I think that this book did the setting and the atmosphere so well. Like, perfectly. You really felt what it feels like to be like at that sort of lakeside, summery, mm-hmm. somewhere that people return to year after year. You really feel Fern's struggles in trying to grapple with a situation that I don't think she ever wanted to be in.
Yes.
Where you kind of say like, I don't want the family business, but then
I
you have to
set the boundary, but yeah. you left it to me. Yeah.
But then like you've left it to me and then really grappling with like, well, shoot, am I going to let this go?
Right. And the love that she discovers within herself, for both herself and her skills as a businesswoman. Mm-hmm. I also really liked that there were these moments of challenge where like, oh, my dream place in Toronto that I always daydreamed about buying became available. And that was the moment that she made her decision that she was staying.
Yeah.
I will also say, and this might go both in the like and dislike column, it was so listenable. Like, I fell into it, but I never felt like I was in it.
Okay.
If that makes sense. Like, and yeah. I don't think that's a bad thing, especially because you know how tired I was this past weekend
yeah.
while I was listening. y'all, I was exhausted. But I think there is a level of like, I bought this story. I was into this story. I did feel like I was watching a movie the whole time, but I didn't necessarily ever feel like I was.
Hello, everyone. My name is Matt Neglia, and I am the host of the Next Best Picture podcast, part of the Film Entertainment Awards website, nextbestpicture.com. On our show, we explore all year long what is possibly going to win Best Picture at the Oscars. We do this by conducting interviews with people within the film industry, holding weekly reviews of the latest theatrical releases, and on our main show, where we dive into various different topics, answer your fan questions, and also do our best to explore Oscar history's past in hopes that it will tell us something new for this upcoming award season race. We hope that you will join us on all the various podcasting networks. We look forward to seeing you over at nextbestpicture.com.
You know, a lot can happen in 7 minutes, and luckily, that's how long it takes me to tell a story. My name is Aaron Calafato, and I'm the creator of 7 Minute Stories. I'm proud to partner with Evergreen Podcasts, and I'd like to invite you to join me on this journey. I'm going to take you on some crazy roller coaster rides using my unique extemporaneous storytelling style, and together, we're going to try to make sense of the world, all through the art of storytelling, and all in approximately 7 minutes.
Taken into it. So while the settings and the atmosphere, like, the settings are solid, but the atmosphere is what's golden. Like, the settings could be a little stronger, but because the vibe is so well set, you can put the rest of it together. It doesn't have that like fifth star element where you're like, oh, I feel like I'm living in it. But I also don't think I would have wanted that with this type of story.
Yes, I agree. And one of the other things I really liked about this, and I'm curious about your take, because it is a trope that we like or a style that we like in thrillers, is the sort of then and now setup that this book has. So it's like present day and then it's 10 years ago, this Toronto magic day with Will. Did you enjoy that sort of back and forth?
I really liked that. I know that's what I was trying to get out before, but I loved that kind of layers of time. And usually the third element in a lot of books, like the edition of the mom's diary, is usually the thing that's one step too far. Like, that's usually where it's like, you didn't need all that, but it was perfect in this because it comes in later. It is only ever like, and of course I listened to it, so I can't actually say how long it was, but to me it felt like it was only a page or two, where it would be like a partial entry, and it always matched what was happening right before, and it fed into what was coming after. So it was a good breakup, but I loved the time jump. I think it was the character building. Like, it sold why they were meant to be together.
Yeah. And I agree. I think so. There are some like additions of Fern's mother's journal diary entries, and it was just enough. It wasn't like pages and pages of diary. We're going back, we're figuring out. It was just enough to give you that insight into how Fern sort of entered the world and the place that her mother was in, and sort of that context to understand why Fern is the way that she is and why she's making these decisions around the resort and Will and all of those things. So I agree. It was very well done. Are you inclined to keep reading more romance?
Knowing that Carly Fortune only has one other book at the moment, I'm definitely ready to pick that up and see what the vibe is.
Yeah.
But I also think, yes, I'm ready to pick up more romance. I'm ready to give it a try. But I do think I still need your hand-holding to kind of give me suggestions in the direction, like similar to this, where it's where the stakes aren't too high. I think that's a big one for me. The stakes can't be too high, because I...
Yes. And I think that's why in our discussion, when we were talking a little bit about vibes and like just knowing what you would want out of this, or like where you were at mentally, you wanted something right that wasn't super high stakes. And so that's why I said, like, well, you can't read Happy Place.
Right.
Like, you can't read Love in Other Words. Those are not, those are, that's too much. Like, that will make you sob. That's not what we want.
Right.
So, right. Yay.
Yeah, I was definitely like,
I agree. Oh, so yes, I'm going to get you to read more romance then.
Yeah, I'm pretty easy to get, huh?
Yeah, I mean, it's I'm not doing like a hard sell.
So the other thing that I don't know if I was expecting was the spice. It was it's not incredibly spicy, I don't think.
Yeah, enough. I mean, like, there's a little, not enough, but like, it's like a peppering.
It was very, it was odd, I will say. I think that was my one note, is that like, there is this buildup to like, oh my gosh, are they going to sleep together? Mm-hmm. Is this going to happen? And then once they do, there's a bit of the like, oh, okay, well, now it's just anytime they see each other, it's on sight. And that's why I was like, okay, maybe I understand why Gen Z doesn't want romance in movies anymore, because they don't think it furthers the plot.
Yeah.
But it was also like really beautiful. So
I think this is what is so interesting about romance, I think, is that the spice level, it is so hard to categorize, in my opinion, because everyone's definition and preference of spice is just different.
Well, because, right, this is not very spicy. It happens, what, about halfway through the first time? I can, I sent you a text.
You did.
When I was like, oh my God, I think I got to the spice. I feel like it happens at like 56% of the way through the book the first time. And that's when I was like, oh, okay. And I think in this book, it read a little odd because, like I was saying earlier, it did not feel like this book felt like it could stand alone without the Will storyline that like, or that this book, I feel like, would have benefited more from a fade to black, I think.
Okay.
Now, that's not necessarily my own preference. I have no qualms with spice, but I think when you are reading like a five pepper book, you're walking into the spice. Like, cause I know that there's like a whole camp. My very limited understanding around spice is that there is a whole camp as far as, I'm reading this purely for the spice, or I'm reading this for the atmosphere. And where you fall on the pepper scale, you can find books that kind of match that. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, that would probably be my other like critique, is that I think this would have read a little better as a fade to black compared to on the page, because it did feel like two different writing styles.
That is interesting to me because my favorite type of romance is one with really good plot, but also some spice. And so for me, this book ticks that off. And I actually hate Fade to Black.
Now it's not my favorite because, to me, in my mind, it defeats the purpose of like what you're trying to achieve here. But yeah.
But I know that there are a lot. I know there are readers who prefer the Fade to Black as well. And so I do agree. I think that you sort of have your different categories. You have your ones that like are Fade to Black. That's your preference. I know some people though that if it's Fade to Black, they just won't read it because they're like, what's the point? And so I like when it has the middle ground, good plot, and some spice. But then there are books that I do read simply for the spice, where like I don't really care about the plot.
I agree with you. I believe that I fall into the same camp. I just don't think the spice was written as well in this book as the book is written. So I think
that makes sense.
I don't want a Fade to Black. I'm with you of the like, I want a really strong plot and then I want some spice, or I don't care what's going on. I just want to read the spice. Like I'm spot on with you on that. Having read all of, you know, three romances in my life.
Right. No, but I think
that makes sense. I think in this case, it would have benefited from it just because it felt, and once again, like Carly Fortune, love this book. Love you for writing this. Thank you for this beautiful piece that I read. But the writing was a little weak for me for the spice compared to the rest. When the rest of the book reads so well, that was just kind of where I was like,
No, and I think that that makes sense, is that if like the spice feels detracting or it just doesn't quite feel as...
If the quality was a little lower.
As in tune with the rest of the writing of the book.
Exactly.
That makes sense.
It would have been one thing if it had happened 10 years ago on that 24 hours where like that fit really well.
But then I think, and then
also
so that's another
coming in.
No, but so that's another interesting thing because obviously, so yes, we've talked about spoilers. So this is a spoiler. In the 10 years ago scene, like the sort of day that they spend together, they're both in other relationships.
Yes.
And so there's sort of that premise of like wrong time, like wrong time, right person.
Yeah.
And then also like a little bit of a discussion of sort of like emotional cheating versus physical cheating. And so they don't physically do anything in that 10 years ago scene. But I think that's interesting to where like, had the circumstances been different, if the spice was in that scene, like in that context and then not later.
Yeah. Or, it just tonally it matters. Wow. Me pulling out my English major. tonally the spice matched the writing better for the 10 years prior than it did in the current moment. And like, as we got there a little later, you know, I think like the first time was when I was like, this doesn't quite like, that was great, but it didn't quite fit. As we kind of like got along and the scenes were a little shorter or worked out a little differently, that's where I was like, oh yeah, cool. It fit better, but there were just a few moments where I was like, this is a little jarring.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense to me. That makes sense.
Sorry. And I had to get there, I guess.
No, I think that that tracks. And so, and that's the thing I do find the hardest about recommending romance is like people's spice level preference.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think I wanted to jump into Neon Gods, but I will read it now.
But going into it, knowing that that is like that's far
12
more
peppers. Yeah.
Yeah. Like explicit in terms of the spice scenes. It's a lot of peppers. So I've already interviewed you. I've already asked all my questions.
So number one, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
What did you think about the 9 years ago revelation when, so we hit that third act drama, Will has disappeared. He's not there for the dance. And she goes into his cabin to set all of his suits on fire and she sees the drawing. I love that I'm being vague now. So there, since we've done spoilers already, as their 24 hours is coming to an end, they promise to meet each other at the lake. There's the title for you. And they pick a date. They set it. They set a date and a time, I think. And Fern shows up. She's sitting at the dock. And Will never shows. And so then when we, and that was like the dramatic end and where she goes back to Toronto and keeps living her life and blah, blah, blah. And then on this dramatic moment where Will suddenly disappears and she can't get a hold of him and everything was great and everything was perfect and this was supposed to be their second chance, she runs into his cabin and she sees this drawing of her on the ground. And it's the outfit and all of the bits and accessories she was wearing the day 9 years ago that she was waiting for Will at the lake. Mm-hmm. What did you think of that? Was it a little cheesy?
It was cheesy, but I liked it.
I gasped.
I liked it so
I
much.
Gasped.
Because so for me, right. So here we are, like majority of the way into this book, thinking that Will just didn't show up.
Right.
He just didn't come to the lake for whatever reason, whether he just like he was still in a relationship or he just didn't feel like he was in a place to show up with Fern. Like he just didn't show.
Right.
What I appreciated about him showing, or the revelation that he did show up, he just never approached her.
Yeah.
It
really sells that.
Yeah. That he's been thinking about her and that he wanted to be with her, but for whatever reason, I mean, we kind of find out that it's like he didn't feel like he was in a good place. He didn't feel like he had enough to offer her. He didn't like just all of these other reasons that you talk yourself out of doing something. He showed up and he chickened out. He got nervous. Yeah. He got scared. He thought like, you know, I'm not ready, whatever. To me, it was almost a little bit more endearing that like it showed even then that he wanted it to happen. He just, you know, got scared.
Right. It showed that he actually cared about her then too. Like he didn't forget. He didn't decide not to go. He wasn't at any point leading her on.
Yeah.
He just got there and he went, these are all of the reasons that I can't do this to you. But yeah.
Yeah. Where like the pact meant as much to him as it did to her, and that he remembered the date and time, and just that like he couldn't like walk down the dock. I mean, it crushing to her, you know, that he couldn't like go the full way. He like showed up but couldn't take that step with her then. But then I think that's why, again, like you're fighting for it. He's ready for it now. They're both ready for it now. And somebody has to take it that full way. So it's like, I do think this is funny about romance. It's like they each show up like 80%, but you've got to bridge that like gap. You've got to just like get out of your own way.
Which, yeah, I really appreciated that as well. There's something special about it that I think you really only get delivered in romance when you've got that, like, how do we meet each other where we're at?
Yes.
Now, Emma, can you tell me about some of the tropes in this book?
Yeah. So,
and then we can see what else I might like trope wise.
Second chance romance.
I loved that. I love that I didn't have to get to know someone new, because I read 50 Shades when it was the hot book. And I didn't need another instance of like, oh, I met this random man on the street and he's this, you know, he's this mess that I can fix. Like, I loved the second chance and that we were, I guess I love a spoiler. I love knowing that this is a second chance for them and that I don't necessarily have to like, it lowers the stakes. And that apparently for me is very important.
Yeah. And it's also sort of that like chance encounter, like random connection, missed connection style that I quite enjoy as well. This isn't like a trope, but obviously like the summer setting is sort of a big part of the vibes of the book.
I think so too. I don't think it works as like I would read like a novella that followed up that was just like a cute day in their life throughout the year if we saw what it was like during down season. But it needs the energy of summer and people on the lake and everyone being in the cabins. And yeah, would I love to see what the resort is like in the winter when it's mainly just the restaurant running and they're being cutesy? Like, yes, but I want that in like a bonus scene. I don't want the book like that.
Yeah, exactly. So I do think as much that's not a trope per se, but it is certainly something that plays a huge role in the style of romance that you're getting. And so like these summery, beachy, vacation-y style reads are a different tone than ones where that's perhaps not part of the story at all. I like that the characters are very layered. I like that they seem very real. They seem at times very messy, which is very human.
Well, and also thereabouts our age.
Yes, which is another part that I really enjoy. Romance is about 30-somethings.
I didn't know that that was a thing or that that was a thing I needed. But when the mom's first diary entry comes in and she says 1990 and I went, oh, she's my age. Like,
I know. Yeah. And so I enjoy really nice. That. I really enjoy that. It's not that I don't enjoy romance of other ages, but obviously being in our 30s, it's just more relatable for our particular circumstance where it's like we're not middle-aged.
We're just far enough along in our careers that we can be at this level of established.
Yes.
And the layers also made the characters human, made them people. I don't know, like, sure, I love some like wish fulfillment fantasy nonsense. I could totally see myself picking up like a five pepper version of that when what you truly just want from it is the spice. But when I want this kind of, you're giving me a plot, you're giving me a story, you're giving me a reason to care, hearing Will's struggles, hearing why he didn't walk up to her 9 years ago, like hearing what makes, you know, why is his phone ringing a specific chime at, you know, this time? And why is that the only call that he doesn't take in front of her? Like hearing all of those motivations, I really resonated with me. And it's just like, yeah, I want these characters to be people to have layers.
Exactly. And their issues seemed very realistic to our age group, to the things that people are going through. Whether you can relate to all of the issues or not, you can sort of find certain things where you may have grief over a parent or familial issues or whatever. There are some things that you can just find, I don't want to say comfort in, but just like that other people experience these same messy things as you do.
Life balance and career balance and family drama, or however you want to look at it, it very relatable.
I do just love that sort of like one day setup, like one day that changed everything. They explore the city and do all of these things that they wouldn't normally do. They're showing each other all their favorite places. They're getting out of their comfort zone. I love that because it does feel like something that would happen in your like late teens, early 20s, where you just, you're more inclined to just go have like a day. And I love that.
I do too. And that's why I'm like back in on the wish fulfillment, because that is relatable. There are many a day I can think of from high school where my friends and I would just like, oh, it's the summer. Let's pick a random place to drive to and we're gone for the day and we do all of these things and like the connections you make and the magic of that kind of special day just really makes sense.
Yeah, where you're just like less encumbered by things. I think you're able to kind of play hooky. And I do think it's certainly like a good reminder that if you're able to, you can do that at any age. And sort of find that magic. But again, I do think it is more relatable that you are certainly more inclined to do it when you're younger. So I do love that kind of reminisce. Like, yeah, when we were, you know, 21, we would like, we took a day and just skipped college and drove to the city and just did whatever. So.
And that is what, like, also to me makes the romance magical, because I think in romances, there has to be that element of whatever you want to call it. But in my brain, I'm saying magic, where it's like, there was a spark that made this romance happen. It, I love the idea more that it all happened in one day and not, oh, they were friends for years and will they, won't they, on and off, bloopity blah. And then boom, they run into each other by happenstance. Like, I love the idea of that could have been the moment that your life changed. And this is your chance to see if it is worth it. Emma, what have you done to me?
I know. Welcome to the club.
Well, look out. I'm going to interview Emily Henry next time.
Fine. For a funny story, we can co-interview. Yeah, I would definitely recommend Every Summer After, also by Carly Fortune. She is writing book 3 right now, so we don't have details yet, but I expect another book from her in 2024. So,
no.
Very exciting.
Oh,
things.
Oh, no. I have more books to look forward to.
You do. Welcome to the club.
I think this concludes Joe Reads a Big Romance. Listeners, please let us know what you thought of this episode. Send an email to professionalbooknerds@overdrive.com. If you liked this format, we'd love to hear more from you. I think it's pretty clear what Emma and I each read the most of. So if there is something that we should be doing this again, testing the other on, who knows? Let us know. I had a ton of fun. I hope you did too, Emma.
I did. And I have now thought about, like, okay, if we do this on the flip side. So, like, Emma reads something that I don't normally read, which is pretty much everything that's not romance or thriller. So Emma reads a biography, like,
oh,
something,
shoot, that's true.
You know, like,
what does Joe read a bunch of that Emma does not?
Like, there's a lot of things I don't read. So it has made me think a little.
And also, if you want us to return and talk about another romance, I'll read another one.
Yeah. Big, a big romance mashup.
Big romance mashup. Well, thank you all so much for joining us. We hope you enjoyed today's episode. And as always, happy reading.
Readers can sample and borrow the titles mentioned in today's episode on overdrive.com or in Libby. Our library friends can purchase these titles in Marketplace. Professional Book Nerds is proud to be an Evergreen Podcast signature program. To learn about other Evergreen podcasts, visit evergreenpodcasts.com. Our podcast is produced, recorded, and edited by Emma Dwyer and Joe Skelly and presented by Overdrive. To learn more, visit professionalbooknerds.com.
Hey there! I'm Hannah.
And I'm Audrey.
We are a sister filmmaking duo
and co-hosts of Sleepover Cinema,
our show where we analyze the films that created the collective unconscious of the girls, gays, and theys of the late 90s and early 2000s.
Princess Diaries, The Cheetah Girls, Aquamarine, Cinderella, the one starring Brandy.
We haven't stopped thinking about these movies since we first saw them, and we want you to rewatch them
and review them with us.
Are these movies as bad as critics would have us believe?
Do we even care if they are?
We are always unpacking that very question on Sleepover Cinema.
Check out Sleepover Cinema wherever you get your podcasts or at evergreenpodcasts.com.
See you soon.